You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Does this mean the end of Devon Travis, and do you care about either?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think Yonjovich Solarte is the end of Devon Travis. I think Devon Travis is the end of Devon Travis.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Also like the fact that you've put together these industry leagues. So what I would like to, the bone I want to pick with you is, can I please join even though I'm no longer in the fantasy baseball industry? You can turn me down if you want.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining with me on this episode is an extremely special guest, one of my favorite people in all of the podcasting world. That is Chris McBrien of the Pop Goes Your World podcast. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, Justin, I'm doing great. Listen, great introduction. Thank you so much. It's been a year and a half since I was in the fantasy baseball industry. So I figured no one would remember who I am. But with an introduction like that, that's wonderful. Which leads me into something else. I actually have a bone to pick with you if I could.
Oh, off
the
okay.
Top of the show. Sorry, you invite me on and then I'm like going to hit you right away. By the way, first of all, I will preface this by saying congratulations to you, Justin Mason, for what you are accomplishing in the fantasy baseball community. I'm watching you from afar. As I said, it's been a year and a half since I've been in that world. And so I'm watching from afar and very, very proud of what's going on, my friend. You are killing it. You're doing a great job. You're establishing a name for yourself and your brand. I noticed the early mock drafts were not called early mock drafts. People were even referring to them as the Justin Mason mocks. You've got a brand going, and I'm really, really proud of what you're doing. So I think that's great. I also like the fact that you've put together these industry leagues, and you've even got a sign-up page online where people can go and sign up for these leagues. So what I would like to – the bone I want to pick with you is, can I please join even though I'm no longer in the fantasy baseball industry? You can turn me down if you want.
I don't know. I think we could probably work something out.
Seriously? Like, the thing was, on Twitter, I didn't want to hit you up. I didn't want to be like, oh, please, can you please let me in? Because I was like, because I went to the site and I was going to register because I'm like, I want to join. And then I went to register and the first thing it says is, okay, a link to your most recent work. I'm like, I left Dear Mr. Fantasy a year and a half ago. I'm in trouble. He's not going to let me in. But I figure if I, plead here and beg, maybe you'll let me in.
I think we can do it. We can finagle. I mean, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational is not a democracy. It is most definitely a dictatorship, and I am the all-powerful ruler. And so I will rule right here and now in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast that you are allowed in as long as you come on to my podcast when I start the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast.
Of course I will. Of course I come on your podcast anytime.
Well, see, that was a pretty easy one.
So when I'm done, if I go in and if I register there, I can get in?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Oh, this is so great. Thank you. What I'll do is when it says provide a link to your most recent work, I'll provide a link to this episode.
Sounds good.
Here we go. Perfect.
I'm the only one who checks the links to the work, and actually it's been pretty funny seeing some of my friends in the industry what they're putting for it since they know that I'm the only one who's going to see it.
So, I think I saw you share a couple of those on Twitter. It was like – JustinMasonLove.com and stuff like that.
Yeah, Craig Miss, JustinMasonsBeard.com.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Jake
well,
Seeley
consider
just
me.
No. All right. Well, now that we got the business aspect out of the way, or at least that business aspect, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself if for some reason they don't know who you are, if they've just started listening to podcasts in the last year and a half, and then what you guys do over at Pop Goes Your World.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for people back in the day, you know, the old school people that used to listen to podcasts when they first started coming out back in, you know, a couple of years ago, whatever. I started Dear Mr. Fantasy back in January of 2012. You know, it was a very successful podcast. We had a lot of fun doing it. Was nominated for a couple of podcast awards along the way. I got to go down to the podcast awards and meet my idols from ESPN, Nate and Matt. And that was great. It was great. And I met a lot of good people in the industry and outside the industry. I made a lot of friends, including yourself, Justin. One of the first friends that I made in the industry was you, actually. So it was a great experience. And I did that until I did it until halfway through 2016. And I decided to step away from the show. It was a lot of work. There's a lot of, you know what it's like, mm-hmm. the amount of work and the research that goes into putting out a quality show. It's a lot of work. And I decided I need a bit of a break. I'm a college professor by day. So I'm a busy guy, you know, outside of this. So I decided to take a step back and walk away from the show. Jason Consoli took over the show. He's still doing it. And I decided to start up a new podcast with everyone in the industry's buddy, Yancey Eaton. And Yancey and I do a show called Pop Goes Your World, and we talk about movies and pop culture and music, and it's two different perspectives, two different generations. I'm the old guy, so I'm Generation X, and he's the millennial, you know, Gen Y, and we just go at every single subject under the sun. You've been a guest on the podcast before. Other people from the fantasy industry have been on. It's a lot of fun to do. I'm a lucky guy.
My wife has been a guest on your podcast.
She has. We were all talking about our favorite celebrity crushes when she came on the show. It was what a great show that was.
It was fantastic, and you guys do great work. I just listened to the Star Wars episode, and if you've seen the new Star Wars movie, go and listen. I think it's an amazing take both you and Yancey have on the new episode. I won't give anything away in case anybody hasn't seen the movie. Because this isn't a pop culture podcast, or in case they want to be surprised with your guys' takes, because I thought they were spot on.
Oh, good. Well, good. I'm glad. I've gotten a little bit of hate from it, but it's definitely a Gen X take from me, obviously.
Yeah, and I kind of fall right in between. I think technically I'm a millennial, but like I'm right at the beginning of it, and so I definitely don't feel like I'm a millennial.
That's good.
All right.
No offense to millennials, of course.
And then you can be reached on social media where?
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at C McBrien. McBrien is IEN. And if you follow me, I'll even follow back and we'll have great conversations about fantasy baseball or movies or whatever you want.
All right. Let's go ahead and get started and talk about your favorite team, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, yes.
And this is an interesting team. I did the prospect minute where we covered all the prospect players, me and Matt Thompson. And he doesn't think it's going to be a very good team this year. I think a lot of people don't think it's going to be a very good team. I think it could surprise. I think it still has a lot of interesting pieces, and I think there's no more interesting piece than Justin Smoke after his breakout year last year. He hit 270, 355, 529 with 38 home runs and just absolutely crushed it. Is he for real?
Oh, that's a good question. Smoke is so hard to get a handle on. You know, he hits lefties and then he doesn't hit lefties and he hits lefties and he doesn't hit lefties. Consistency's always been his thing, right? I mean, defensively, the guy's great. Playing time's not going to be an issue for this guy this year. Obviously, E5's gone. Morales can't play first base. And Pierce isn't a threat to him. But I think he's going to be an interesting guy to watch this year. All signs obviously point to regression with him. His ADP, early ADP anyway, shows people are being cautious with him. And I personally think that's the best approach to take. Think about it. He's basically a guy that was this super hype prospect that's had one good half season in his career. And if you look at last year, he had that great first half, his second half, everything went down. Everything went down except his walks. But that was more a result, I think, of guys pitching around him because of his first half numbers, you know, and also the fact that the Jays lineup around him sucked at that point. So, you know, no one would pitch to him. I would not personally spend a top 100 pick on him.
I don't think I would spend a top 100 pick on him either. However, I think this is somewhat legitimate. Do I think he's going to hit 38 home runs again? No. I think I would be closer to the 30, low 30s kind of number.
I think that's fair. I think 30 home runs is fair.
he swung less outside of the zone. It wasn't like he attempted to pull more or hit more fly balls. Those are right in line with what he did in 2016. But his contact percentage went up. He became more selective on the pitches outside the zone that he was willing to swing at. I think these are fundamental changes that he made that actually could account for why he was so good. And I think he obviously benefited from this juiced ball era. And so depending on if Major League Baseball has done anything with the balls to kind of make them go back to a little bit of what they were, or whether they're just going to let them ride the way they are, I definitely think there's going to be a little bit of regression. I'm not necessarily thinking that he is going to go back to being like a 20 homer guy. You know, I think the power is legit. I think the changes he made are legitimate. And I am, I'm kind of in a little bit, especially if you can get him fairly affordably. And I probably should have brought up the NFBC ADP, just to check where he's going. And if you give me 1 second, I will find where he is going. He is currently going as the 143rd pick overall, according to average draft position on NFBC, going in front of guys like Ian Happ and Ronald Acuna and Adam Jones, behind guys like Rafael Devers, DJ LeMahieu, Eduardo Nunez. I think that's a fair place. I would probably take Conforto above him, but I'm totally fine with taking him over Acuna or taking him over Adam Jones, depending on how risk-averse you want to be.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, someone like Adam Jones is just so consistent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a kind of a boring guy when it comes to fantasy baseball. I like those consistent guys that I know I'm going to get the numbers from. So I don't know if I would take – I think I might take Jones ahead of Smoke. I don't know. That's a tough one. It's tough, too, because different positions, too. trying to think if there's any other first baseman. Like, what about Santana? Someone like Santana. Do you like Santana better than Smoke or not? I think I might go with Smoke.
I think I would go with Smoke, too, because I worry that that Santana isn't going to play quite as much without a DH in Philadelphia. And the fact that they've got Rhys Hoskins now moved to the outfield, there are going to be days they want to give him maybe a break from playing the outfield and put him at first base. They still have Tommy Joseph on that roster. I think there are going to be a lot more days off for Santana. And obviously, I don't think that lineup in Philadelphia is as good as it was in Cleveland. So I think I would take Smoke.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, let's talk about Yonjervis Solarte, who was just traded to... from San Diego to Toronto. Does this mean the end of Devon Travis, and do you care about either?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think Yonjervis Solarte is the end of Devon Travis. I think Devon Travis is the end of Devon Travis. He is one of, if not the most injury-prone player in the game. And when he's healthy, he's nothing special. You know, he doesn't put up a lot of huge counting stats, no real power or speed. I personally thought the Jays picking up Aledmys Diaz was a threat to Travis, more of a threat to Travis than Solarte is. I think Solarte might even be third on the depth chart at second base, and he might even be third on the depth chart at third base too, with Diaz ahead of him on both. He's 30 years old, right? I mean, he makes good contact, but he is what he is. He's pretty much a platoon guy. I mean, he's a switch hitter, but he doesn't hit lefties. Right. I guess he could get to 20 home runs, you know, with the new ballpark if he got the playing time. But I don't know. Like I say, I think that's the issue here. Playing time could be an issue for this guy. So I think they're bringing him in for depth. The team still wants Devon Travis to be their guy at second base. They want Troy Tulowitzki to be their guy at shortstop. But they're bringing in Diaz and Solarte as insurance policies for both those guys.
I think you nailed it right there with that last sentence. I think both Solarte and Diaz are insurance policies all over the diamond in the infield for this team. I think if something happens to Devon Travis again, if something happens to even Justin Smoke or Tulowitzki, which is bound to happen, or then now they can trade Donaldson if they decide that they aren't going to compete. I think these guys will accumulate at-bats all over the diamond, which makes them interesting, I think, in deeper formats because they're going to – Solarte already has multi-positional eligibility. He's eligible, I believe, at second, third, and short this year coming into the season. But I think Aledmys Diaz will pick up eligibility at different places too. So I think in deeper formats, these guys are interesting. I've never been a Devon Travis guy.
Me neither.
And the injuries just kind of seal the deal for me. I'll let other people kind of go after Brett Laurie 2.0. All right, let's talk about some of these guys that we just kind of briefly mentioned. Troy Tulowitzki, Kendrys Morales, Russell Martin, Aledmys Diaz. Are you interested in any of these guys?
Those are some interesting names. So with who you want to know, Tulo?
Any of them. Because, I mean, for me, Tulo, like, is the draft slot is great. You don't have to pay anything for him this year, but are you going to get anything out of him?
That's the thing. And the thing is, too, like, shortstop is, you know, there's some good shortstops out there to pick from. So it's not like in years past when you had, you know, Tulo was ranking up there high because there was nobody else, right? I mean, there's a lot of good shortstops ahead of him. I didn't like Tulo in his heyday. I felt he was too injury prone. Again, going back to what I said earlier, I'm kind of risk averse. You know, I kind of play it safe in fantasy. I'm usually pretty successful when I play fantasy, and a lot of that is I'm pretty conservative. I don't take a lot of risks. I certainly don't take risks early in the draft, and that's why I didn't like Tulo, because for all those years, you had to take him early. Now that he's going late, I don't like him any better, because, I mean, I've been able to see him firsthand now for a couple of years in Toronto, and his hit tool is declining. You know, I mean, the defense is still there. It's great, but in fantasy, it doesn't mean anything. And so for me, I think you can just take a pass on Tulo, to be honest. I wouldn't touch him. So you want to know about Morales as well? Is that what you mentioned? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Morales I actually don't mind. You know, he is what he is at this point. He's going to get, you know, 25 home runs, 80 RBIs. You know, he's going to hit fourth in that lineup, I think, consistently all year. So he'll put up some counting stats doing that. Diaz I already touched on a little bit. For me, with Diaz, I think I'm willing to chalk it up to a sophomore slump with him, because he had that breakout 2016 and then he fell off last year, but you know, he still makes really, really good contact, and you know, he just doesn't walk, right? But when he hit the ball last year, he really suffered from a low batting average and balls in play. So I personally like Diaz. I'm big on him. I think he's got the skill to rebound. Russell Martin is an interesting guy, and it's an interesting guy with Jays fans, because I've been hearing a lot of hate toward Russell Martin, even out of Jays fans. And I think before you go running away too quickly from Russell Martin, I think you got to remember a couple of things. So a year ago, he was in the conversation as a sort of back end of the top 10 catchers list. And he is the undisputed number one catcher in Toronto. And when he played last year, you know, he was hitting out of the cleanup spot at times. Now, a lot of that had to do with, you know, a rash of injuries on the team and ineffectiveness of a lot of the other Jays. I get it. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact this is a catcher hitting cleanup at the Rogers Center, and he's a leader in the clubhouse. He's a leader of the team on the field. And let's be honest, in fantasy, catchers suck. You know, they do. I get that there's a lot more depth at the position than there has been in years past, but it doesn't change the fact, I think, for the most part, that catchers are really, really brutal. And especially if you're looking at, like, I'm not taking him in, you know, in a 10 team, you know, one catcher league, but in some of these 15 team, two catcher leagues, Russell Martin as your second catcher can be a great, great guy to partner with a number one catcher. So I think he's a name that you can wait on until late, like really, really late in your draft, and you can still get some production out of him and instead, you know, use some early draft picks to shore up other positions. So I think Russell Martin does have some use for me.
And here's the thing with Russell Martin. So I'll start with him before I touch on the other ones. Before last year, I mean, he dealt with some injuries last year, and it definitely affected him. But before last year, he had at least 460 plate appearances in the previous six seasons. I mean, that is a pretty nice plate appearance total from a catcher. Usually catchers, and he's an athletic guy, so he's getting older. He's going to be 25 or 35 coming into the season. But, I mean, he's been athletic enough to play second and third base.
For what it's worth, depending on your league, I think he'll have third base eligibility in some leagues this year. And that is, you know, that gives you some flexibility too.
Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think he is one of those guys that I don't mind as a catcher too in those 15 team two catcher leagues. I think he's a guy that, you know, you're going to get some level of production from him. And like you said, there's really nobody who's challenging. Max Pentecost cannot play catcher. He's not going to be a catcher in the major leagues, in my opinion. And I just don't see really anybody supplanting him this year. He's still got 2 years left on his deal. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays would love to see him have a little bit of rebound, so maybe they could try to trade him for you know, at the deadline. So I think Martin is a guy that I'm still willing to go after as a catcher too. Diaz, I wasn't a Diaz guy coming into last year, but I do think he kind of got a raw deal in St. Louis. He struggled. I mean, he struggled to start the season, but then he was actually pretty decent before getting sent down. And I didn't really understand why they made the move. So it just seemed like he just fell out of favor, and that seems to happen. I make this comment all the time. I don't trust Mike Matheny in the Cardinals organization because they seem to fall in and out of love with players all the time, and then just kind of give up on guys and send guys down or just stop playing guys or play guys in weird spots. I think he just needs to change his scenery, and there really isn't much better place for him to go than Toronto, playing in Rogers Center, playing in that lineup. I think there is a real good chance that he's going to be able to piece together 400 to 500 plate appearances this year, and I think that will have some value. And then let's see, who's the other guy? Oh, Kendrys Morales. I think Kendrys Morales is very underrated. I think one that people give guys who are DH only a little bit too much of a deduction. One, I don't mind filling up my utility spot because especially you're going to have reserve players. You can move guys around using those reserve guys. I don't understand why people get so enamored with keeping a reserve their utility spot free and open throughout a draft. There isn't really much of a benefit. This is a guy who's hit 28 and 30 home runs the last 2 years. The average ticked down a little bit, but you know that it's within the baseline of what you would expect. I think Kendrys Morales is a tad bit underdraft this year, and I think I will have him in a number of formats.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of underdrafted, is mm-hmm. Josh Donaldson being underdrafted? Currently going off of an ADP of 29th.
29, you know, big difference from the last couple of years. You know, think about it. I think he's back to the 40 home run mark mm-hmm. in 2018. I think he's going to drive in 100 plus runs. I think he'll score 100 plus runs hitting out of the two hole. So, yeah, I think he'll throw in a handful of steals. So, yeah, I think you could say he is being a bit undervalued in ADP. And that's great. That's just what you want, right? Fantasy baseball is all about getting value where you can, right? I think it's a good time to be looking at Donaldson. I mean, if you look at the tear he went on when he got back into that lineup later in the year, that's 2 years in a row. He's gone on a big, big, big tear down the stretch. So I tell you what, if you don't get him at the draft and he's underperforming a bit in the first half, mark him down as a guy to target in the trade market.
I think that is, again, completely spot on. This is a guy who's been a perennial first-round pick for quite a while. In the second half, hit 24 home runs, 276, 386, 606, triple slash. Walked at a 14 or almost 15% clip, 14.9. I mean, this is the guy we've always thought he is. I mean, and this is a guy I think that is going to hit 40 home runs again, give you a pretty decent average, chip in a stolen base here and there, and, you know, 100 runs, 100. I don't know what else you want from this guy. I think he should be going towards the top end of the second round, not towards the bottom. And I've seen him slip into the third round in 15 team drafts. And I think that is a huge steal. Donaldson's going to end up on a number of my teams this year.
Yeah, I think the only thing really holding him back in fantasy is, again, there is a lot of strength at third base. So then maybe that pushes him down a bit.
There's
but
a
I think,
huge cliff, though.
Like, yeah, that's true. And you want to get him before you get to that cliff, right? Mm-hmm.
And I think he's just one of those guys, you know, last year he dealt with injuries coming into the season, really slowed him down. But like you said, took off once he was healthy. And previously last year, he had four straight seasons of at least 668 plate appearances. That's 155 games played minimum the previous four seasons. So, like, I don't think he's a health risk just because he's another year older and dealt with injury last year. I think last year is the aberration, and we're going to see him back to his power and MVP caliber ways.
And I think you make a good point there about that cliff because it's right after him. You know, you got Machado there, and then it kind of drops down. You got guys like Bregman and Rendon and Turner, so there's a bit of a drop. Moustakas had a pretty good season last year, but still he's a bit risky. So I think you're right. You got to get, if you're sitting there looking at Donaldson and you're at that sort of back end of the second round, I think it's probably a good idea to grab him because if you don't, you might get stuck at third base.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the outfielders, Steve Pierce, Kevin Pillar, Teoscar Hernandez. How would you rank these guys in terms of who you want on your team?
So I'll, if I got to rank these guys, I will go in reverse order of what you said. Okay. So I will say Teoscar Hernandez, then Pillar, then Pierce. Hernandez is an interesting guy. He obviously needed an opportunity to play. You know, he's going to get it in Toronto. He's got the potential to steal bases, but I don't think I would be drafting him in fantasy for speed. And this is why. In order to steal bases, obviously two things need to happen, right? You need to be able to get on base, number one, and number two, the team has to let you run. And there's no guarantee of either one of those two things happening with any regularity in Toronto next year. So he does kind of remind me a bit of Broxton in Milwaukee. You know, like he could go 2020 or he could end up in the minors because of like a 200 batting average and a 38% strikeout rate. So, you know, if he's going good, he could go 15-30 if he gets the playing time, but that's going to come with like a really, really low 200s batting average. So in Roto, he's the kind of guy, he can hurt you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you play in points leagues, the strikeouts are going to hurt you. So he's not great, but of these three guys, that's not saying much. So I will put him first. Pillar is an interesting guy. Excuse me. Sorry. I'm battling something here. I'm a little under the weather. So I'm going to hang in as best as I can with you. Pillar, I would put second. I remember a couple of years ago, I was this guy saying, you know, people were all high on Jason Hayward. And I was like, hey, no, Jason Hayward's getting overvalued. Here's what you need to do. Instead of drafting Hayward, wait five rounds and draft Kevin Pillar instead. You're going to get the exact same stats. Now the gap is closed between these guys. They're both probably around 250 or so, right? But your advantage of getting Pillar in that spot, it's not there anymore. The Jays tried him out of the leadoff spot last year, as you remember. It just didn't go well. You know, he hit .248 with a .306 on base percentage out of the leadoff spot. Now, he did steal 10 of his 15 bases out of the one hole, but, you know, they ended up dropping him down the order. So, but I'll put him second, and Pierce is Pierce. You know what he is. He is what he is at this point in his career. He's injury prone. I think he's kind of, you almost kind of think of Pierce as being this kind of like lefty hitting specialist, but then he doesn't hit lefties. You know, he's not reliable. He is one of the most injury prone players in the game. So you can't put any stock into him whatsoever. So that's the order I would go in.
Yeah. What's crazy about Pierce is he's been a guy who's, yeah, a lefty killer. And in the past, last year hit .207 against lefties and .270 against righties.
I think a lot of, like, he did good in the first half against lefties. Mm-hmm. I remember that, but the second half he just dropped off, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, Pierce is unexciting. The other two guys are a little bit more exciting. I'll start with Pillar. You know, Pillar is a guy I think gets maybe just thought of as a defense-first guy, and for the most part he is. But he's also put up at least 14 stolen bases in each of the last three seasons. There is really no draft cost associated with him. And so in your 15-team draft and hold leagues, like, he's a guy that I want on my bench because he's going to play a ton because of the defense. He's put up at least 584 plate appearances the last three seasons. He's going to accumulate stats because of that. They may not be pretty, but if you're in some of those deep draft and hold leagues where you can't make pickups, you can't make trades, he's one of those guys that I love because – you know he's just going to play, you know, every game virtually. So, Teoscar Hernandez, man, he is an enigma. And I love the Keon Broxton comp. I hadn't thought about that before, but that's fantastic because he is very Keon Broxton-esque. Last year in a short sample, struck out almost 38% of the time. But he has power. He's got speed. And I agree. I think he is one of those guys that can go 20-20. If things went right for him, and currently his ADP is 311 in NFBC. I don't see many guys at that point in the draft that have 2020 potential and an opening day spot already. So Teoscar Hernandez, I think, is a guy that in deeper formats I'm going to take a shot on because I think the upside is huge if things click for him. And while the strikeout rates haven't been necessarily amazing in the minors, he's put together stretches where he struck out, you know, 20% of the time or less. And I think if he can, you know, strike out between 20-25% of the time, the Jays will keep running him out there, and he can build a pretty nice base in terms of counting stats for you. All right, let's move on to starters. Is Marcus Stroman a top 20 pitcher to you?
Well, top 20 is because I don't know if he is. He's close. I'd say more like 30 to 40. It's just that there's all this talk this year with starting pitchers of how there's, you know, your top, you know, you got your top four guys, and then there's a massive drop off. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, there is a drop off down, but then there's actually, if you take a look at starting pitching this year, it's actually quite deep. So I don't think you need to sort of panic on pitching too much. And that being said, there's a couple of pretty decent guys in that, you know, 15 to 25 range. I don't know if Stroman quite fits in there for a couple of reasons. He feels like he's safe, but the year before, so last year he had a good season, right? But the year before that, if you look at the first half of the year in 2015, he was bad. I personally thought he should have been sent to the minors by the All-Star break of that year. So, you know, he's had his rough stretches overall. I just don't know. I don't think I would put him into the top 20. Would you? I'm assuming you're asking me that because you think he might be.
I think he's close. But I think he is a roster construction type of pitcher. He's the kind of guy that
I like that. Yes.
Yeah. If I end up with one of those top four pitchers, he's the kind of guy that I love. Because I think he will offer pretty nice ratios, but he doesn't strike guys out. So you need a high strikeout pitcher to kind of pair him with. Like, if you're pairing him with a Scherzer, you're pairing him with a Sale. That's something I love. But I'm not going to pair him with a Zach Greinke, you know. I'm not going to pair him with another guy, you know, a guy I might feel has a fair amount of volatility to him, like Robbie Ray, even though I love Robbie Ray. I think those kind of pairings – and. The hard part for a guy like Stroman, especially if you're in a deeper format and he is your, you know, starting pitcher number two, is do you really want to be thinking that much about roster construction that early in a draft? You know, and so for me, I like Stroman more in shallower formats where I'm getting him as, you know, like my fifth or sixth or seventh player on my team, as opposed to my third or fourth, you know, kind of player on my team. I think it's just too early to really have to think that strongly about roster construction. So for me, I think he's going to fall just outside of my top 20 when I finish my ranks, probably around 24, 25-ish, which I think is still a very good pitcher, and I think he's going to return pretty good value. But for me, there's no huge upside. Like, we've never seen the strikeout stuff that we thought we might get earlier on in his career. So until he can show that, I think we have to kind of just knock him a little bit.
So can we play a little game here?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, right around that kind of mark, if you had to pick between Stroman and, let's say, Gerrit Cole, who would you prefer?
Ooh. Oh, man. This is really testing my Gerrit Cole love, because I love both these guys.
I know.
I'm going to go with Stroman.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. I think I might go with Cole. I think I might go with Cole. I think he has more of the strikeout upside that I'm looking for at that level, but they're close. What about Samardzija?
Oh, God, another guy I love. You're just picking on guys I love right now.
I guess I'm picking your brain because I'm thinking about 200 strike or 200 innings, you know, and I think Samardzija will get to 200 innings, right?
I think Stroman will too, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I think they're a good comp. Mm-hmm. They're both about 200 inning guys. Samardzija might have a few more strikeouts than him, might have a lower whip. About same ERA, wins be about the same. They're both close.
I'm going to go Stroman, but that is so close for me.
It's close. And then I think an obvious one, what about C-Mark, Carlos Martinez?
It's Carlos Martinez.
For me too, all the way. Okay, so. Fun. Just to kind of just figure out where he fits into that. So.
All right, I'm going to throw the rest of the starters just kind of into a grab bag. Who do you want out of J-Hap, Marco Estrada, Aaron Sanchez, Joe Biagini?
Oh, man, all those guys. Can I just talk a little bit about each one of them?
Sure, of course.
With Hap, okay, so I think what I want to get out of Hap and what I'm actually going to get out of Hap are two entirely different things. What I want, what we all want, is 2016 J.A. Hap with 20 wins, you know, 195 innings pitched and, you know, low whip. But I think what we're going to get is every single other year of J.A. Hap's career. You know, you're going to get 10 wins, 140 innings, and like a 140 whip. He was good down the stretch, like his last six starts. He's a funny guy. He's a different pitcher than he was earlier in his career, but I just don't put a lot of stock into him. Marco Estrada, his K rate's gone up each year he's been with the Jays. So there's that. But so is his home run to fly ball rate, right? And so is his ERA. So I think it's regression to the mean for him. He's a guy that lives up in the zone. He doesn't have that overpowering stuff. So he relies on changing speeds, but his changeup is just so good. It's one of the best in the game when it's on. He's great to watch when he's on. Doesn't walk a ton of guys. He's pretty good at limiting the damage. The other thing too is for me, when I look at Estrada last year, he has that inflated ERA, but that was due to, like, he had just a couple of really, really bad games. Like, he gave up 7 earned runs twice. He gave up 6 earned runs 5 times. But, you know, so Biagini, Biagini is just an afterthought to me. He's a fifth starter, a swing man. Nothing more, nothing less. Like, he profiles as a starter because he's got all those pitches, right? Because he throws a fastball, slider, curve and change. He had a lot of stamina issues last year when he was trying to transition into that role. He ran into a lot of problems second time through the order. So I play in some really deep leagues and I basically have no interest in Biagini. So I wouldn't recommend him for anybody. And for me, that leaves Sanchez. I think if the team needs to compete as a Jays fan, they need Stroman and Sanchez firing on all cylinders in the same year. You know, in 2016, Sanchez was great. Stroman struggled. Last year, Stroman was good and Sanchez was a washout. I guess the good news with Sanchez was it wasn't like an elbow or a shoulder, right? It was like a blister problem, right? In his fingernail. I know those can be lingering, but I mean, he started throwing last month and so far so good. I don't know if we're going to see him get all the way back to 2016 numbers, but I think he's capable of getting back there at some point in the near future. For now, I would hedge my bets on him, but I would probably rank him as a 25 to 30 starting pitcher, maybe even ahead of Stroman. Wow. And I think I can get him a lot later than that in the draft from what I've seen in early mocks. So I will gladly take a shot on him.
I mean, I thought I was high on Aaron Sanchez, but man, you just blew me out of the water.
And it's funny because I'm like Mr. Conservative, but in this is one case though. You saw some things in 2016 out of him that I like. And the only reason I'm saying that is I'm not going to draft him at that spot. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. I think he can perform at that spot. So I think I can get him way, way late. So I like him. Okay, there's value.
I'm with you then on that statement because I do think he has the upside of a top 20, top 25 starter. And I think the blister issues obviously derailed his season last year. And I don't think that that the projection systems out there are giving that credit, you know, or taking that into account. So I'm going to throw a lot of the projections I've seen for him out the window and kind of say I think he can get 150 to 160 innings this year of like a 3-5 ball with, you know, 8 strikeouts per 9, which is a really, really good pitcher. And considering he is going, you know, currently right now as the 90th starting pitcher off the board, 243rd overall on NFBC. That to me is absolutely insane. He's going in the Jordan Montgomery, Cole Hamels area. I'm all over Aaron Sanchez. He will once again, because he was on a bunch of my teams last year and burned me, but I'm going to go back to the well. I'm not going to be scared off by him at all. So I'm with you on the Aaron Sanchez love.
It's hard. It's good for you because it's hard to come around when someone burns you like that because you got no value out of him. But he's in a position this year to provide nothing but value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Worst case scenario, if he's bad, you can get rid of him when you've taken him as the 90th starter off the board.
The 90th starting pitcher. Exactly. Who cares? Write him off.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at that point, I don't know. I like him.
And I think, you know, Happ and Estrada both have shown good skills over the years. Yes, they're coming off years in which they struggled. And I think they both offer I think they're both at like kind of the line of demarcation and starters. I mean, especially Estrada. Estrada's going off as the 317th player off the board. Starting pitchers going behind him are Mike Leake, Germaine Marquez, Tyler Chatwood, Sean Newcomb, Matt Shoemaker. I mean, we've seen Marco Estrada be a top 30 guy as a starter in fantasy. So for me, I'm okay with taking the gamble in deeper formats. Again, like those 50 player draft and holds, you know, where you need to roster a lot of pitchers. You know, I'm going to have a number of shares of Marco Estrada. He might be a guy I actually take in this RotoWire dynasty draft because he just keeps falling and falling and falling. And at some point, he offers some value. And Happ is the same way. Happ's going 256 off the board. I like what Happ can give you. I think he offers some stable skills. Yeah, the whip's going to be a little bit high, but he keeps the ball in the park. He doesn't walk too many guys. He's got a decent strikeout rate, always puts up good ERAs. You know, we may not see that elite season, like you said, again, but I think we can definitely see a guy that at the end of your draft, if you've got a lot of risk in your pitching staff, if you've taken, you know, shots on guys like McCullers, on guys like Alex Reyes. I think Happ is one of those balanced guys at the end that is going to give you, you know, a good amount of innings with good, with decent ratios, enough strikeouts to supplement if something goes horribly wrong with one of those risky guys.
So just to go back to Estrada for a second, I want to agree with you. I know it doesn't make for great podcasting. We got to disagree, right? No, I got to agree with you. And the thing is, when you're getting him that late, everything, if you look at Estrada's peripherals, everything basically points to a 4 ERA. But with 180 innings pitched and, you know, 10 wins or so, he can give you value when you're drafting him at that spot. So I think you need to keep that in mind. And like you said, it's not, he's not that far removed from being an all-star. So
we have to remember, too, a 4 ERA is not what it used to be.
Exactly.
You know, a 4 ERA is, you know, maybe a few years ago, we kind of went, ew, when we saw that. But that's not the case anymore. And, I mean, this is a guy who definitely got unlucky in terms of ball and play. Went, had a 295 BABIP, where previous three seasons didn't have higher than a 257. He's got a career 263 BABIP. I think he got a little bit unlucky. I think the defense is actually, you know, pretty decent behind him, so... I'm gonna say Marco Estrada is a bounce back candidate. He's not gonna be a top 30 starter, but there's no reason to think he can't be a top 50 starter. And right now, you're not getting him anywhere near that. All right, let's finish out with Roberto Osuna. Lost the job for a little while because of some mental health issues that were going on. How safe is he to you?
So I'm glad you mentioned that because he did battle some personal mental health issues last year. He's gonna be fine. You know. He's good. And if you look back at 2015, the team really, really relied heavily on him, especially in the playoffs. And then the next year, he saved 36. He followed that up with 39. This is not the same team that's going to score 10 or 12 runs a game like they were doing back in 2015. There's going to be more close-scoring games, more save opportunities. He's got basically no competition for his job. I think he's a top five relief pitcher in fantasy.
Wow.
You know, I think, because if you think about it, I mean, you know, who's ahead of him? You got, you know, Jansen and Kimbrel and Chapman, but I think Osuna's right there then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he did have some issues with a few too many fly balls, you know, in his first 2 years in the league. He's corrected that. He doesn't walk anybody. I think he's a top five closer in fantasy. Book it. I watch him game in and game out. That kid is legit. He is mature beyond his years. And it's hard to believe at times, but heck, he's only 23 years old. Mark him down. I love Osuna. From a fantasy perspective, he's one of the top guys on this team.
Yeah, I think he got one, you know, I talk about this all the time. And, you know, the first time you ever came on the podcast, we had a really nice long discussion about Josh Hamilton and the things he was going through off the field. And I've talked about a number of guys who have struggled because of off the field issues. And actually, I should have mentioned, I'll swing back around to another guy that I'll bring up who dealt with some off field stuff for while playing in Toronto last year. But Osuna dealing with the mental health issues, dealing with the anxiety disorder, you know, you forget, like, Zach Greinke struggled with that kind of stuff in Kansas City. And one of the reasons why his career kind of got off to such a slow start. But once corrected, he was fantastic. And last year, when Roberto Osuna was on the field, in spite of the ERA being markedly higher than it had been the previous 2 years, the underlying statistics were actually really fantastic. Strikeout rate went up. Walk rate went down. Home run rate went down. You know, the only things that happened were his strand rate was extremely low. It had been 82.5% the year before, 79.7% in 2015, all the way down to 59.5%. He got unlucky there.
Yeah, that's going to correct.
That's going to correct. His BABIP will correct a little bit. His FIP and XFIP were both marketably better than his ERA. I think he's going to be absolutely fine. I think you're right. I think he is my fourth or fifth starter, depending on how you want to, you know, rank, you know, Edwin Diaz and Corey Knebel, you know, Felipe Rivero, guys like that. But I there's no reason why, there's definitely an argument to be made that he should be going after the Jansen, Kimbrel, Chapman tier of closers.
Yeah, I agree with you. We've seen issues with Giles. Mm-hmm. You know, Wade Davis is in Colorado. Knebel, you know, is not necessarily proven. So I think I agree. I think he's right up there. Yeah. I like him.
I want to mention, too, because I'd been thinking about it while we were talking about, or while you were talking about him, and then forgot to mention it while I was talking about it. Marco Strada, he dealt with some off-the-field issues too. I don't know if you heard about these this as well. A different kind of off-the-field issue. He got outed for cheating on his wife very, very publicly in the season, and he talked about how it really affected him on the field. He was having a hard time concentrating on the game because he was going through this really, really ugly mistake that he had made. And so I think, you know, it's really hard to go out and do your job when you've got really awful off-the-field issues going on. And while he definitely brought those on himself, and I'm not an advocate of infidelity, I think that's something to take into account, too, with what happened with Marco Strada last year. So, again, Marco Strada, guy I'm buying. All right, that's going to wrap us up. Chris, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. I always have a good time coming on your show. It's been a tradition of mine for about how many years now? 6 years we've been doing this together. And I'm always glad to come on anytime. I'm serious. I am going on the computer when we're done here, and I am signing up for that league.
You do it. You definitely do it, and I will make sure you get in. Got yes. A couple more weeks of signups, and then I'm going to start putting those leagues together. And I've got the hard part would be I'm trying to separate people away from their friends, but you are such a fantastic and amazing person. You're friends with everybody, so it's going to be hard to like separate you away from your friends.
You're too kind.
But definitely follow Chris on Twitter at @cmcbryan. Go listen to Pop Goes Your World. It is fantastic, especially if you want, you know, something maybe a little bit different than our podcast, something that focuses on something really light and fun and fresh. What are you guys doing next week on Pop Goes Your World?
So next week, we're bringing, you know, Sammy Reed from Fantasy Insider. So he's coming on as a guest next week. We're doing Rounders.
Oh, and Sammy, I have to
watch the movie
player.
Rounders. Yeah, I'm watching it as soon as I get off the air with you right now, I'm going to watch the movie Rounders. And then I got to go on the air tomorrow night with Yancey and Sammy and talk about it. It's a millennial movie that they're making me watch. So hopefully it'll be good.
Does it even count as a millennial movie, though? Because I mean,
it's 98, I think it is. So it's kind of out of the cost. So I'll give it to him. But he really loves this movie, so he's going to make me watch it. He's made me watch a few duds, I got to tell you. He's listening to this. I'm sure he's probably going to give me grief. But, man, he's made me watch bad movies. Although he said the same thing about mine. He's like, man, you give me some bad movies to watch. But, you know, that's what it's all about. We challenge each other to watch movies from our generations, and we come and talk about them. So that's what we're going to do next. And then now we're just going to go from there and have fun every week. We really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. I'd lay out all my work, but there's so much to say, and this episode's going a little bit long, so just find it all on Twitter. So that's going to wrap us up. For Chris and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.